It's 5:30 on Thursday, October 10th, 2020, and we'll start our board of directors meeting. And Curtis, you want to read the advisory?
November 10th, Jim.
November 10th, okay.
I mean December 10th.
December 10th. I don't know what day it is. Okay, I apologize. December 10th.
You know, due to COVID-19, it's hard to keep track of time these days, so.
Yeah.
All right. In compliance with local and state shelter-in-place orders, the RDRA will not offer an in-person meeting location for the public to attend this meeting. Instead, we're doing this via Zoom, consistent with public health orders. Comments, you can email them to chavel@marincounty.org, or you can raise your hand. To raise hand, if you're on a phone, you'll hit *6. Otherwise, there's a function in your on the Zoom screen that enables you to raise hand to comment. When it comes time to comment, to unmute, you'll be pressing, if you're on a phone, you'll be pressing *9. And if you're on a laptop or a iPad, you'll be pressing the unmute button. And I believe that gets us started. And if, when there is public comment, we ask that comments are limited to 3 minutes. And we will be sticking to that throughout the hearing tonight.
Okay, thank you, Curtis. Can we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Jim Wickham?
Here.
Kate Sears?
Here.
Claire McAuliffe?
Here.
And David Kulik?
Here.
All right.
Okay. Item number two on the consent on the agenda is the consent calendar. Is there any board member who would like to move or remove any item, A, B, or C? Okay. Seeing none. We do have a request to remove item C on the approved resolution 1020. Is Robbie in the attendance right now in the audience?
Yes, he is. He does have his hand.
Okay, Robbie, I see you there. Okay, so can I first get a motion to approve items A and B on the consent calendar?
I'll move. Approve all A and B.
Second.
Okay. Can I roll call, please?
Certainly. Wickham?
Here. Yes.
Yes. Sears?
Yes.
Pollard?
Yes.
And Kulik?
Yes.
Okay. That's approved. Now, item number C, which is approved resolutions 1020 on the SAFE funding. So, Curtis, can you give us a brief, and then Robbie, you can ask your questions pertaining to the ordinance, okay?
Thank you. So, and I believe, oh, would you turn that down? There's feedback. We have multiple people out here calling in. So, basically, inquiring about the SAFE program and the $400,000 grant. Recently, as you are all aware, we did a protest, and we occupied Jim's boat to protect his home and make sure that he had a place to come back to. We did that successfully. Now, there's a conversation right now saying, oh, well, you know, why aren't you just working with us, trying to yada, yada. And we brought up today our guest, Barbara, who was made homeless by Curtis Havel, oh, about a year and a half ago, correct? And she actually was in a similar situation as Jim Rorson, because she had a slip lined up, and that Curtis Havel crushed her boat while she was about to get a slip. And so that's why
what's that guy do with the grant?
So the grant, these boats are being crushed via SAFE program amongst men, correct? So it's important that this feedback be given to you. And so you understand where we're coming from, because it's not that I'm not trying to be litigious. I'm just trying to, it's difficult and challenging to get these stories across, because you guys have, you know, you only have so many staff, and unfortunately I'm afraid that not a lot of these stories aren't coming to you. So that's why I want to invite Barbara to talk about how the SAVE program has impacted her, and that might sway your consideration how you approve these funds. See what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah. She has 3 minutes.
Yeah. Barbara.
Yes.
Here we go. Yeah.
Okay.
And Just be Ken. Just let him know how it affects you.
Is this Ken?
This is the RBRA.
No, this is the chair, RBRA.
I'm sorry, sir. Okay. I lived in my car for the last year and a half. I had a little boat, a little Erickson over at the Matt Butler's place in San Rafael. And basically the reason I was there is because my 120-acre ranch burned down in the Tubbs fire, and I had nowhere else to go. So I came to my boat. I had a wonderful little berth. Matt took real good care of me, and it was wonderful, but it was time for me to move on. I went to Janet at Pelican Harbor, and I let her know what I was doing, and I wanted to rebuild my ranch, but it's going to take some time. And she said, no problem. I'll have you fill out a contract, and we'll put it by the board. And I've got two or three berths here, so we'll, you know, I think you'll be good to go. And I said, great. So I was on my boat for a few days, and I had to get off of it because my dog broke his leg, and I couldn't get the dog off the boat. So that was when I stayed in my car for a few days. I did let the chief of police know, just to make sure he understood that it was me in the car around the bend from Cafe Roma. I just want to make sure I was legal and all that. The next thing I know, about 4 or 5 days later, I get a call from one of the anchor outs. They said it looks I was in the city. I caught a bus to get back here as fast as I could, and I got there just in time to see it pulled up, and then it was crushed, you know, shortly thereafter. I was in my car for a year and a half in that parking lot, and I came down with black lung from the mold because I didn't know mold was in a car underneath seats. I got pneumonia. I didn't breathe for 15 minutes, taken to the hospital and resuscitated. And then the hardest part of all, this was the hardest part of all, I'm in the Jeep, my two service dogs, and every other night, Officer Padima would come around, bang on my window, and say, get out of your car and pick up the garbage. This was around midnight. I said, Officer, I don't leave garbage around. He says, get out and pick up the garbage. So I got out, and I looked at him. I'm serious about this. He had one hand on his gun and one hand on the taser. Well, I chose to pick up the garbage. That was every 3 or 4 nights. He'd be there about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and I'd just get out and pick up the garbage. I lost about 60 pounds, and I was getting sicker and sicker. And finally, I just went to a friend to say, can you take care of my dogs? I don't think I'm going to make it. And so I've been with her, thank God, for 4 months. I've gained weight. I feel much better. And now it's time for me to get my boat back, and it's time to get back to Sausalito. So that's pretty much what happened.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Kevin Pfeiffer.
Board members, do you have any questions?
Kevin Pfeiffer also submitted an email to Havel to discuss the SAFE program.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Okay.
Can I make a public comment? Jim?
Go ahead.
Yes. So I submitted. Yes. Thank you. I submitted a request to have the proposal for the SAFE grant also pulled from the consent calendar, because I really am not comfortable with the methodology that this agency, your agency, chooses to use. Of course, it's not really your agency. It's actually part of the Community Development Agency, which is actually CAPES. But you seem to be running this wing of it. So I'm talking to you now. So the methodology which you have chosen is highly, highly skeptical to me, because of the way that you pass the SAVE grant without itemizing it through your audit system. I've been an anchor out for like over 12 years now, and I don't believe that I have ever seen an other auditor than Mayor Accountancy audit the agency's books. So I have a problem with that. That methodology is pathological, because you are into a system where one single auditor does all the auditing, and then I don't even know, because it's a copyrighted audit, I don't even know who handles that audit before I see it. I don't know where that audit transfers to before it's presented to the public by who? By your clerk or by your executive director or whatever pathological type program, methodology that you have chosen to use. It's all skeptical to me. That's why it's important that the public find out why $400,000 is being used to crush boats by a shadow harbor agency that only makes what, $30,000 or $40,000 a year? So what is actually going on here? And does the SAVE program actually understand that the public nature of your organization is not of a public sector type harbor? It's more of what would you call it? I'm not even sure. Because it has three different modes of operation, not like a public sector. So we're going to have to come up with a new terminology here if you continue with the pathological methodology that you've become so comfortable with. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Right, anyone else?
Hello,
public?
Where? Hello?
Please state your name, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Jeff Jacob, Mr. Wickham. Seems at least ironic to have a program named SAVE that is used to crush people's homes. That there was a promise that was made that during COVID that would not happen. Jim, my friend who I've sailed with, has one of the most beautiful boats. It was at the Army Corps chained up. We have, luckily, and through the grace of Yah, a house saver who stayed on that boat and made sure it was not crushed. We have an alternative to being ruled by outsiders, by people that are not cognizant of what is really going on here, of the details of the boats and of the skippers and of the crews. We have an alternative to all of this craziness, and that is self-rule. It's called the Small Craft Harbor District. It's administered by the people who live on the water. It takes 50 signatures, which we have, and a mission statement, which we also have. And LAFCO, the Local Agency Formation Committee, okays this, and then we elect people from amongst ourselves. This is the rule of any kind of government, is it has to be governed by the people who are closest to the action. When the people are outside, they can understand certain things, but not others. So I'll point you to Jeremiah 34. In this, the sabbatical year, which began in September for the Israelites and for anybody else who wants to be involved, and ends next September. We forgive the debts and we set the captives free. In Jeremiah 34, there's a promise given to set the captives free by Zedekiah, the king of Israel. And they go through the motions, they set the captives free, and then for whatever reason, they say, we can't live without these captives. We're going to take them back. And Jeremiah has no problem calling in Babylon to punish Israel for not following the sabbatical year. So we demand that the charges the felony charges here on the Anchorage are dropped to the resistance to this illegalities that are going on here from outsiders. And we demand self-government. So in the interest of the holiday season and the happiness that I could see on all your faces at the beginning of this, I do not want to take that away. I want to add to it. And the way to add to it is to take the burden off of your shoulders and put it on our shoulders. We can handle it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Any further comments from anyone? Okay. Hearing none, we'll close public open time. And board members, you have any questions?
Okay.
Curtis, you want to respond to any of the comments?
So the SAVE grant, in order to execute the SAVE grant, as discussed in the staff report, it's brought to your board for ratification, if you will. And then that document is forwarded to the California Department of Boating and Waterways, and then they execute the grant on their end, and then the funds become available. This year, the amount of grant funds that we received was beyond what was budgeted. So we actually, in tonight's resolutions, not only have a resolution accepting the grant funding, but also a resolution adjusting the budget to accommodate for the increase in funding from Department of Building and Waterways. In response to the comments, I'll say that, most of the comments, I guess, were generally related to the SAVE grant and how the SAVE grant is used. I could respond to the specific instances, but it's not really SAVE specific. So I think I'd rather just say that, the SAVE grant is what enables the Richardson's Bay Regional Agency to remove a vessel when it's gone adrift and runs up on the rocks, either in Tiburon or Belvedere or Sausalito. When a vessel sinks out in the anchorage, this is the grant funding that helps us go out there, raise the vessel, and dispose of it properly. This grant funding is what we use to really manage and maintain the bay and try to keep it free of marine debris and clear of vessels that are inoperable, unseaworthy, and frankly pose a threat to the not only mariners in the bay, but the shoreline as well as the environment. So this grant funding is important because it helps the RBRA, it assists the RBRA in fulfilling its charge to keep the bay healthy and safe and enables us to do that management process. If the board has any other questions, I'm happy to answer.
Okay, kind of a motion to approve the grant, the SAVE grant for.
I'll move approval.
The second.
Second.
Okay, Claire, can I take roll call, please, Curtis?
Sure. Board Member Sears?
Yes.
Board Member Kulik?
Yes.
Board Member McAuliffe?
Yes.
And Chair Wickham?
Yes. Passes. Thank you very much. Okay. Item number 3, information item, presentation on community efforts. Curtis, do we have any?
I haven't heard from the community, and in terms of anyone who had some sort of effort occurring.
Okay. I know we've tried to in the past.
Doug Swarms typically is the person that makes those presentations, and I haven't heard from him now in probably about a month. So.
Okay. All right. And I know with COVID-19, Kate Sears and I have done quite a few coffees, and hopefully 2021 would be a better year for us to have more face-to-face conversations versus Zoom. All right, item number 4 on the agenda, salt work channel marker replacement and strawberry dredging project. Curtis?
Yes. I'm going to share my screen and start up a PowerPoint presentation here. And I think, let me see here. Okay. So, there are a series of channel markers. As you come down the...
I don't see anything.
You can't.
I'm sorry?
I don't see anything.
You don't see anything?
No, not yet.
Oh, no.
This is delayed.
Oh, gosh. Okay. My computer's been running slow. I wonder... Boy.
Curtis, if you want to send that over to me, I can present it.
Okay. Let me escape out of this. And then, all right, so that should be off the screen now, I believe. Yes? Are you back to looking at me, or are you still looking at
We're looking at you.
We've been looking at you the whole time.
Oh, God. Oh, it's punishing. I'm sorry. Let me see here. What's going to happen is if I try to – so my computer is just not running fast enough. So what's going to happen is if I try to email it over to the moderator, I think it's just going to freeze my computer up. So let me try this. I'll go back to share screen again, and I'll just do it the old-fashioned way where
Also, Curtis, I believe there might be a few people trapped in the waiting room.
I'm sorry, in the what?
In the Zoom waiting room.
Okay, thank you.
There we go. Now it's changing over. There we go.
Okay. So we're looking at it?
Yep.
So you can see it, but it's not the presentation view. It's the view where you can
right.
see all the
slides. Okay. So we should be seeing a little bit more now, and hopefully, okay. How's that work?
There we go.
Is it still slowing down?
If you have people in the waiting room, can you please let them in too?
Yeah, thanks.
I'm not seeing anyone in the waiting room.
Okay, cool. Just be clear. All right.
Okay. So channel marker maintenance. There is a secondary channel that extends from the primary Sausalito channel. So as there is a federally maintained channel that runs parallel to the Sausalito waterfront. When you get up to the north end of that, you arrive at the gate that takes you off to Saltworks Canal. This is channel marker one that you're looking at here. The issue of channel marker maintenance and the existing conditions of channel markers came to our attention a number of months back when we received calls from Terry Graham and Barbara Wambach of the Strawberry Recreation District, and they reported a broken channel marker at just right off the tip of Strawberry Point. So at the time, my assistant harbor master and I went out and did, during a minus tide, and took pictures and did sort of a visual survey of the channel markers along Strawberry Channel and Saltworks Canal. Out of 10 channel markers, 3 are currently damaged, meaning they simply don't exist. Others had the general condition of all the channel markers was severe decay below the waterline. So in this particular photo, hopefully you're looking at a photo where I'm pointing a boat hook towards the middle, and there's a bunch of green moss hanging off of the channel marker. There's actually a light spot in the middle of that channel marker. That's where it's hollow in the middle. If a vessel or somebody bumped into this during a higher tide, there's a pretty good chance this would snap off. And with that, the concern here is that the channel markers provide the markings for the roadway or the channelway. If the channel markers aren't there, if the channel markers are cracked off at some point down below the waterline, they represent a hazard to navigation, which is problematic. Here's another photo of a channel marker where you can actually see how it's bending. You can see the hole in the middle of the channel marker. So 3 channel markers have already been destroyed. 2 of the 3, my predecessor went out and sort of did a temporary fix where he took PVC pipe and an old traffic cone and put it on top. And those have been in place now for, I believe, a couple of years. At least they mark the channel, but they're nowhere near regulation as far as aids to navigations are concerned. Here's the picture of the channel marker that really started this whole conversation. We went out and put an orange buoy around the base of it and left enough scope on the buoy to alert mariners passing through the area of that particular hazard. It also serves as the channel mark temporarily. When we were doing our survey of the channel markers along Saltworks Canal, we made it all the way up the channel and into the Tiburon Cove Apartments where we met Rob Burns. And he informed us that the Strawberry Recreation District had a dredging project planned for 2023. And when I checked in with the Strawberry Rec District, their budgeting was for dredging only and did not include for channel marker repair or replacement. So I went down the rabbit hole trying to figure out who's responsible for the channel markers, who maintains them, who replaces them when they're damaged. And at this point, what I've discovered is that the Department of Public Works back in 2017 had a budget item to replace and repair channel markers along the Salt Works Canal. That was going to accompany a dredging project by the Strawberry Rec District back at that time. My understanding is that it didn't, the Department of Public Works never executed the channel marker, obviously, because they came into the conversation too late. At the time, I believe the dredging project had already started, and it was just too late for them to jump on the kind of the project bandwagon. So my intention in bringing this up tonight to you was simply to start the conversation, bring it to your attention, bring some awareness to the issue. There's still a number of questions that I need to do more research on, which is the Marin County Department of Public Works, what their ongoing role is here, and trying to clarify that with staff there. Continuing the conversation with Strawberry Rec District. And then very recently I discovered that the Local Area Formation Commission, also known as LAFCO, has indicated to the Strawberry Rec District that in order to create the proper authority to do a dredging project, what they really need to do is create a community service area, a CSA, as opposed to having a rec district do it. So I need to follow up with LAFCO. I mean, I just discovered this earlier this week, so I need to follow up with LAFCO and find out what their role is in all this and what it's going to take to put this project in the right hands to move it forward. In any event, I think that when the dredging project occurs, that is really the right time to do the channel marker replacement, and it would be an in-kind replacement. If there's going to be an application made for dredging, I would imagine it's probably going to go to the Army Corps of Engineers, Bay Conservation Development Commission, Marin County Department of Public Works, and we want to make sure that, if I think we can work cooperatively with the different interested agencies and organizations to make this a project that is comprehensive in nature as opposed to just dredging and not addressing this issue of the decaying channel markers. Another benefit of grouping up with everybody is if and when channel markers do go in, I'd like to make sure that we get Richardson's Bay Audubon Sanctuary in on this, because this would be an opportunity for them potentially to post permanent signage to help augment their efforts to maintain their sanctuary during the winter months. So at this point, I'd like to open up the conversation to your board and see if anybody has any questions, comments. Really, at this point, what I'm looking for is feedback and direction. We're not voting on anything tonight. This is more just informational and trying to start the conversation and make sure that we point ourselves in the right direction.
Okay, thank you, Curtis. Any board members have any? Kate? Kate?
Yeah, thank you for that presentation, Curtis. It seems to me important to get these channel markers replaced so that they're in good working condition. I assume there's a financial aspect to this project, i.e. somebody needs to pay for it. And are you working on that piece of it as well?
Yes, once I get closer to understanding, there's a lot of information that came in over the last 2 weeks, the one being the LAFCO issue, but the other being the discovery that Department of Public Works actually had this identified in their budget as a capital improvements project. I have spoke with Hannah Lee at the Department of Public Works, and she very, very graciously offered to track down the budget and see if, number one, if that money is still available, since it wasn't executed back in 2017. And if it wasn't available, then how do we bring it back online? When she did mention that when they did their bidding for the project, the company name that she raised was someone I had never heard of. And I'm hoping that The RBRA is uniquely positioned because I think we can help kind of connect people in Richardson's Bay regarding this issue. And we can also, we're familiar with local resources. So, you know, of course we have to, I would imagine that our Department of Public Works has to go out to bid on it. I don't know if they, when they went out to bid before, you know, what attention was given to local contractors. So recognize that local contractors are usually, because they're in the area, mm-hmm. it's less cost for them to stage and do the work. Mm-hmm. So there's a cost savings there.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, good. I'm glad you're chasing all that down. And obviously the capital projects budget is in a state of flux given budget the situation at the county in general. So there's a lot of things to be looking into there for clarification. Thank you.
There.
I have a question. Yeah. Curtis, thank you for an excellent presentation as usual. Really appreciate that. What is your sense of urgency with this? What's your ideal time frame is what I'm driving at?
I want to make sure that this project is poised to take advantage of the same timing as the dredging project, at the very least. For the existing damaged channel marker, you know, that's a bigger issue, and in the short term, you know, I'll probably talk to the previous harbor master and try to figure out a temporary solution for the broken channel marker just so nobody runs into it. We've got the buoy floating there right now that identifies it. But that's more urgent. It's the kind of thing where I'm going to look for a temporary solution first and then work towards finding that more lasting solution, you know, further on down the road.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. David, you have any questions?
No, I don't. Thank you for the presentation, Curtis.
Okay. All right, so this would be a public open time for this specific topic on the channel marker. So please raise your hand if you have a question.
We've got one hand raised, it looks like.
Okay. Please unmute yourself, and you have 3 minutes to address the board.
Yeah. Tom, do you want to – it's from phone number 415. I can't see the whole number, but it's the last three numbers are 057.
Hi. This is Barbara Salzman. I am unable to participate by Zoom. I've tried all of your links, and none of them work at either of my two computers, so I don't know if anybody else is having problems, but I sure am. And anyway, I, with regard to the item, I'd like to say that I commend Curtis for his work on this, and I think he should proceed as he's stated, and it needs to be corrected, and I think it's great that he's helping. Thanks. And it'd be great if I could get in, but to see what's going on.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who has their hand raised for this topic?
No hands currently.
Yeah.
None now? Okay. All right, so there's really no direction this time. I think you pretty well heard from us. Continue with your outreach, and I expect to get some kind of an update the first quarter of 2021. All right. Item number 5, Eelgrass Protection and Management Plan Progress Report. Curtis, you want to introduce Rebecca?
Sure. So Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg from Coastal Policy Solutions is going to be making a presentation tonight about the findings and the observations that have been made in response to the series of listening sessions that were conducted by Rebecca. Some pretty information came out. She'll tell you all about it. And she has made, I want to make it clear, she has made a really detailed, thorough college effort in terms of trying to involve all the different stakeholders. And she can tell you more about that process, too. But I'm going to hand it over to Rebecca now. Thanks for being here, Rebecca.
Great. Thank you for having me. I am going to try to share my screen. So let's see if this works. Host is available as attendee screen sharing. Is there somebody who can give me that ability?
Curtis, I'm looking right now, but I think, Curtis, I was in the settings before we started the meeting. If you could, would you mind forwarding me your presentation, or do you mind if I present it for you?
That's fine. Give me a moment here to forward it on to you. If you could maybe put your email address in the Slack.
I'll put it in the chat.
Sorry, the chat, not the Slack.
All right, you shut up.
I believe it's going to come in as a Google Drive link because it's too big. Okay, I just hit send on that. And let's see, while we are, I thought to myself for a second, while we're waiting on that, I'll share something else with you, and then remember that the issue is that I can't share my screen. So hopefully this will just take a moment.
We're used to this type of behavior, so we have music in City Mill Valley when we have a delay in the process.
Hey, you know what, Rebecca? Hey, Rebecca, will you try it now and see what happens?
Sure thing.
Don't you just love COVID?
Oh, hey, I can do it.
Okay, good.
Okay.
So are you all looking at a big jumble of words that has the big word eelgrass in the middle?
Yeah, we are.
Wonderful. So I guess I could have just showed this slide and called it done because this is the result of our stakeholder feedback. Basically, the detailed notes that we took during all the sessions, we put those notes through a word cloud generator, and this is what we got. But don't worry. Don't get excited. You're not off that easy. It's going to be a more detailed presentation than that. So this is what I'm calling the preliminary stakeholder feedback report. I'm calling it preliminary because, as you'll see, there are some missing voices in the stakeholder engagement so far that we'll talk about in a bit. But there's some pretty meaty stuff that we've already gotten, and I wanted to get that back to the board sooner than later. So this is what we'll be going over tonight. I'll describe what the eelgrass protection management plan is and why we're doing it, talk about the stakeholder engagement we've done so far, who's engaged, what materials we presented, and then a summary of feedback, and then some next steps, including some specific direction needed from the RVRA board. So the EPMT comes out of the transition plan that the RVRA board adopted in June 2020. So in that plan, there were five main policy directions, and policy direction number 5 spoke specifically about eelgrass. And it said that RVRA will develop eelgrass protection measures, including the designation of up to 4 zones in Richardson's Bay for various levels of usage. And as we were trying to figure out the best way to implement that policy, it became clear that what was needed was an eelgrass protection and management plan to speak to those exact things, how we're going to protect eelgrass in Richardson Bay and then what those zones would look like. So to develop that eelgrass protection management plan, which we call the EPMP, that's what EPMP stands for, there's a few pieces. There's the stakeholder engagement, which we're reporting on tonight. There's policy review, and then there's some spatial planning. So the stakeholder engagement so far, the targets for the stakeholder engagement were environmental groups, scientists, elected officials, marina operators, resource and regulatory agencies, Richardson Bay Mariners, and I should probably have put, in addition to elected officials, any community leaders that have been involved in the project, in Aubrey's efforts. We held 5 1.5-hour listening sessions in October and November. And we had about 45 people participate across those 5 sessions, and they represented over 20 organizations. And those organizations are listed here on the right. I'm not going to go through all of them. But we had a pretty robust showing from environmental groups, cities and municipalities, and state agencies, including things like the Regional Water Quality Control Board, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So I wanted to show you, I know a couple of you, a couple of the Arbery board members were on those listening sessions. So the materials you're about to see are going to be reviewed. But for those of you who weren't, and then also for those of you who are calling in today or who can see what we're doing here, I want to show you the materials that were presented at those sessions. So each session, like I said, was 1.5 hours long. This was the agenda for each session. Some time to welcome, get settled, introductions. During the introductions, I asked people to share not only their name and their organizational affiliation, but also their experience with Richardson's Bay, whether it's from an eelgrass, or really not just experience with Richardson's Bay, but the experience that they're bringing to this effort. So whether it's eelgrass knowledge or boating or marinas or kind of, their background that they're bringing. I gave them an overview of the... My dog just jumped up on the sofa behind me that you can't see because the background that I have. I gave an overview of the EPMP, similar to kind of what I just did. And then we had 3 targeted listening session questions that you'll see in just a moment. So the meeting goals for those listening sessions, what I'm sharing now are the actual slides from those listening sessions. So this off first agenda slide, then this meeting goals, which was to identify early input from stakeholders and identify those factors, opportunities, and constraints, and some resources that could go into developing the EPMP. So like I said, we did introductions, overview of the EPMP. During the overview of the EPMP, I talked about the importance of eelgrass and existing policy direction from the transition plan. In talking about eelgrass, I gave my usual eelgrass spiel that it's a seagrass, it's a flowering plant, like all plants, it breathes in carbon dioxide and exhales oxygen. It's found in our shallow water basin estuaries, provides important habitat for baby fish like Pacific herring. And herring is actually the last commercial fishery left in San Francisco Bay. So we think of San Francisco Bay as having this, wonderful, fishing and maritime legacy, and Pacific herring is the last commercial fishery left here. And in the 2019-2020 spawning season for Pacific herring, 90% of the spawning biomass of all Pacific herring in San Francisco Bay happened in Richardson's Bay. And that's directly tied to the eelgrass here. The eelgrass also helps reduce erosion, stabilize the shoreline, sequester carbon, and help respond to the variety of impacts from climate change. I talked a little bit about the history of eelgrass in Richardson's Bay, that when the number of boats anchoring here was low and eelgrass was doing well region-wide, it's presumably modest impact to eelgrass, but as we've seen a decline regionally and an increase in boats, it's really where the conflict came. I shared this image that I think is many of you have seen many times, which was the result of the analysis done by Audubon California to quantify the damage that we've seen to eelgrass from anchors, chains, and other ground tackle in Richardson Bay. And, you know, I think this really helps give you a sense of what initially drove this, but these crop circles and this damage is not the only, are not the only threats facing eelgrass here. So there's a need to manage these eelgrass resources in Richardson Bay to meet some regional regulations, things like from BCDC, but also some statewide regulations restoration targets. For those of you unfamiliar, that study was in 2019 and it was published in a peer-reviewed journal and essentially added up the acreage if you took each one of these so-called crop circles or anchor scars and added that up. It was about 80 acres of eelgrass has been removed, and that's about twice the size of Alcatraz Island, so it's not an insignificant amount. I then talked about the policy direction from the transition plan that I covered with you earlier just now. And the language in the transition plan talking about establishing zones in Richardson Bay for varying levels of use. From there, I took the language from the transition plan that describes those four zones. And we had a bit of a discussion about what those zones could look like. There's a restoration zone, there's the protection zone, anchoring zone, and there's some pretty specific language in the transition plan about where those places could be. From there, I talked about how the EPMP is being developed, that it's really building on the science that was done during the 2019 mooring feasibility study, but it's a very different effort. The mooring feasibility study was looking at how might we put a mooring program in Richardson Bay. This is looking at how, this is a plan for how we can protect eelgrass here. Also in the development of this EPMP is looking at that state and federal guidance. So the California Eelgrass Mitigation Policy, the Subtitle Habitat Goals Report, there's a variety of state, local state and federal guidance about protecting eelgrass resources. And then that third piece is the stakeholder engagement. So I described what our goal was for stakeholder engagement. What we were able to implement so far is just a listening session. Unfortunately, we've not been able to figure out a way to do some COVID-safe outdoor drawing sessions, and that's really limited our ability to tap into narrow knowledge. So that's been a disappointment for me personally that we're not able to do an in-person session. And I'll talk a little bit about what we tried to do in lieu of those in-person sessions. So the questions that that were discussed during these sessions, the first was, what are the key threats facing Richardson Bay that should be considered when developing the EPMP, and how can we best consider them? The second question, similar, but had to do with the key uses of Richardson Bay that should be accommodated for in the eelgrass plan. And it also spoke to, you know, are there places in the bay where various uses should and should not occur? And then finally, the third question was basically that poison pill question. So when thinking about this plan, do any final concerns come to mind? So if RBRA doesn't get this thing right, then the effort isn't likely to succeed. And then from there, we did some wrap up. So that's what was presented during the listening sessions. It was the same material presented in all five. Next, I'm going to go through the summary of feedback. Okay, so first, we saw this already, summary of feedback. The first thing that I want to say, I want to be really explicit here when we're talking about this feedback. We have missing voices so far in this stakeholder engagement. In those five sessions, we did not have anybody from the Mariner community participate in those. Like I said, COVID has really limited the in-person outreach we can do, and I had access to very few email addresses for members of the Mariner community from Richardson Bay. There was also, and I'll be frank about this, I was not able to find support from the Mariner community in helping to get the word out. And I'll talk about that on these next couple of slides. So I knew early on that that was a very important voice that we were starting to miss, and so I did a variety of things to try to reach that community. So the first was that during the last RBRA meeting, I shared a link for people to sign up for listening sessions. There were no responses on that survey that I shared. When I realized that, I decided to try and reach members of the Mariner community through Facebook, because I know there's a couple active Facebook pages. I tried to join Saucedo Anchor House Uncensored, even though it says it's dedicated to Anchor House of Sausalito and all affiliates, friend or foe, and I'm guessing I fall into one of those categories. That request to join was not approved. I was in touch with Bobby Powelson on Facebook requesting that I be approved to join, because in order to post on the Facebook page, you have to be a member of it. I was not approved to join. My goal had been to post a poll on the Facebook page that gave a couple different options of how people would like to be engaged. You know, rather than me just saying, hey, here's an option, come to me, actually going on there and saying, okay, here are some options. Would any of these work? And if not, what would? I was not able to do that. So then after those two options didn't work, I just went ahead and scheduled some Zoom listening sessions to just, you know, to try and engage with the Mariner community that way. We scheduled one for after work hours and one was during the day. And it was the same day as a free lunch at the Sausalito Presbyterian Church. We created this flyer for it, which was posted to the RBRA Instagram. I posted it to my personal Facebook page and made it a public post so anybody could see it. I emailed that flyer to the few Mariners for whom I had email addresses. I sent it directly to a couple of folks on Facebook, specifically asking them to, you know, just, even if you're not going to let me into the group, like, can you just post this flyer? And to the best of my knowledge, it was not posted. So unsurprisingly, there were no attendees at either of the Mariner listening sessions. Also on that flyer, I gave an email address that said, if you're not available for the session, but you still want to provide input, it's just eelgrass@coastalpolicysolutions.com. So far, I have not received anything on that email address. So it is, I know that Mariner voices are missing from the stakeholder engagement report. And it's not for lack of trying. I can promise you that. I wish that it were not COVID times and I could just, you know, meet people in person and talk about this stuff, but that's not, it's not that simple. So one of the things that I've asked, been asking for when we talk about next steps is some ideas of ways to tap into the knowledge of the Mariner community and making sure that, that their voices are heard during this process. So with that very, very giant caveat, I want to move into the stakeholder feedback that we did get, because we did have some pretty remarkable engagement from environmental groups, from state agencies, and from community leaders and scientists. So the next four slides are kind of text heavy, but there were some really specific messages that I wanted to share. So this first theme was responses about threats to Richardson Bay that folks would like us to consider while we're developing the EPMP. Probably the most, this is roughly the, like the, I was going to say it's not really in any order, except the first couple are probably the ones we heard the most, and then it's sort of a mix. But when talking about threats, sea level rise really was discussed pretty often. Because of the bathymetry of Richardson Bay, it's a very flat bay floor, which means that just a few inches of sea level rise will really change how deep the bay is, and there's not that complex topography that you see in other places that creates shallower pockets that eelgrass could perhaps move to. So that really flat bay floor makes it very susceptible to the impacts of sea level rise. Public safety was discussed as a threat to Richardson Bay, as was damage from anchors, chains, and other ground tackle. So those top three things were not particularly surprising to me. I did think it was interesting. Marine debris was brought up, not of existing floating marine debris, but of marine debris that's on the bay floor. So folks who had spent some time diving in Richardson Bay spoke to the amount of marine debris that's down there. The next one of the things that came up was water quality, specifically within the context of stormwater runoff from the local municipalities. There was a lot of discussion about the loss of maritime culture, not just the liverboards, but specifically boats visiting Richardson Bay in that more, you know, visiting cruiser type way. And then also the fishing culture that has long been in Richardson Bay and feeling like a loss of that. And then a couple other things to come up were the impact to eelgrass from shading and other impacts from docks. Mostly when talking about that, it was the context of private docks on the Belvedere-Tiburon side. One of the groups that we had were marina operators, and there was a significant concern from them that anything that's created, they talked about the existing regulatory burdens on marina operators and just really hoping that that doesn't expand when they get network putting together. And then finally, one of the things that came up from the scientists was that eelgrass is this very dynamic plant. It grows and expands and contracts and might be in one place one year and one place the other year. And so figuring out how to make some static boundaries when you have a fluctuating plant, that's one of the threats that was raised. And then finally, the lack of awareness about the importance of eelgrass to our local community. Like I said, there's a lot of text. There's another slide with a lot of text coming. So the uses to consider, I'll try and go through these a little bit faster. The one thing that came up frequently is, you know, continuing to recognize that Richardson's Bay is fundamentally an anchorage, and there's nothing about that anybody's, you know, nobody's proposing that it not be an anchorage. Recreation, particularly non-motorized, talked about Richardson Bay as a sailing destination, opportunities for education, marinas, science, eelgrass restoration, birds and wildlife. One of the things that came up was beneficial reuse of sediment and dredge material. Given the number of channels we have, the channel length that we have, the dredging projects that will happen there, and then also the maintenance dredging that happens for the marinas, there's material that could potentially be beneficially reused rather than being disposed of. And then a number of sessions people talked about, you know, things that can be done in the deeper water off Belvedere and Tiburon, rather than keeping the focus just on the software stuff. Okay, so those are the first two themes. These were things that came up quite frequently but didn't fall really into threats or uses. The first was that vessel enforcement is really going to be key to the success of any eelgrass protection plan, particularly if we're talking about zones with different activities that are allowed or not allowed, the importance of partnerships in the implementation of the EPMP. One thing that came up was that oftentimes monitoring programs are conducted on timescales that are convenient for the people who are doing the monitoring. So that's 2 to 3 years. It's a project that people can sort of wrap their head around. But that's not really consistent with how these plant communities function. And so to actually have monitoring built into the program that occur on the ecological scale, so something more like 10 years rather than the typical 2 to 3. And then finally, the don't make marina operations harder is something we heard several times. And that's what they had some pretty specific feedback of the ways that existing eelgrass regulations affect marina operations, none of which I think will particularly be affected by anything we're proposing to do here. Now, the last three items of feedback were the stickiest ones, so that's why I've saved them for last. And these are the three that I will ultimately need some specific feedback on. So the first is the idea of keeping the zones as simple as possible. So the transition plan identified up to 4 zones with varying amounts, varying degrees of use in each of them. There was a description of the restoration zone, the protection zone, the anchoring zone. In certain areas, legacy boats could continue to be there. In other areas, they couldn't. And it, really, what I heard from a number of people was keep it as simple as possible. Have it anchoring and no anchoring, and that compliance will be made a lot easier if we can do that. With that, there was a number of people giving the feedback not to have a specific area for legacy LEVO boards. And the concern there was that it would create like a neighborhood within Richardson's Bay that would be harder to change in future years. And so instead, however, we're accommodating anchoring in Richardson's Bay, accommodating the legacy LEVO boards there as well. So that was the first one. And because that's a pretty different than what's outlined in the transition plan, I would need some feedback from this board about whether we would like to move forward with that simpler zonation scheme. The second item, this came up in every single listening session, particularly the listening sessions that had strong representation from marina operators and strong representation from regulatory agencies. And that's the idea of a mooring program. Basically, that there's an appetite to have people off anchors and onto mooring balls for public safety, and because that's fundamentally what's better for eelgrass out there, is to not have a new anchor scar each time somebody comes in. I know that the idea of a mooring program has been talked about and untalked about and re-talked about and studied, and that mooring program was not one of the, you know, inciting things that led to this eelgrass protection and management plan. But, you know, in giving that stakeholder feedback transparency, that's what we heard pretty frequently, was that rather than, you know, do something now, this eelgrass protection management plan, and then a few years down the road, then look to say, okay, you know, do we want to have a mooring program, was instead to have it as one cohesive planning process. There was some really great feedback from the marina operators who specifically had experience with mooring programs elsewhere of how they can be laid out to be both visitor-serving and revenue-generating. So what we want to do with that feedback, I'll need direction from this board. And then finally, this current process is pretty high level. I mean, if you look at planning processes, it's a pretty small budget and it's just one person, it's just me. And we were not planning to do, a quantitative analysis, any sort of complex GIS analysis. This was going to be pretty qualitative and pretty high level. There was some appetite amongst some of the stakeholders to have something more robust. And that includes, having multiple data layers, doing some more in-depth GIS analysis, and then a couple of people even requested having an alternative analysis where, rather than just coming up with one plan of how or where to put the various zones, we have a couple of different alternatives that the public can give feedback on. Again, that's the feedback that I heard, and so what to do with that is, before we can figure out sort of what the timeline looks like or what the final plan will look like, how we want to respond to these major themes. So next steps, like I said, need feedback from the board about the three major concerns. So there's the number of zones, the moorings, and then the quantitative GIS analysis. I would love to get some feedback from the community. If there are members of the Mariner community who would like to participate in one of these stakeholder listening sessions, I would love that. And this email address is available, eelgrass@coastalpolicysolutions.com. You can either just share your thoughts. You can email your thoughts and opinions directly to that email address. Or if you want to set something up more formally, I'd be happy to. And then once we have that feedback, we'll be able to develop a timeline for finishing this effort. And that is all that I've got.
Well, Rebecca, as usual, an excellent presentation. I love your photos. So right now, board members, do we have any questions for Rebecca? Kate, I'll start with you.
Yeah, thank you, Rebecca. An excellent report. I have sort of a general question, which is, how would feedback from this board make a difference to what the ultimate outcome of your study is? Really, why does it matter, right? If you take, for example, the first feedback about keep it simple, can't that simply go in the mix as something that's been heard? How does that affect what you are aiming to accomplish as a final result of this study?
That's a great question. So the final result of this effort is that what I'm contracted to deliver is a draft eelgrass protection and management plan. So actually writing out what the recommendations are, what the new zonation would be, and what would be allowed where. And so what I'm delivering isn't just a stakeholder study. What I'm delivering is actually, you know, what are those zones, what is a draft version of where those zones, what those zones look like. So the feedback from this board will tell me, yes, we should go with the simpler option and that's what I'll develop. Or no, we'd like to stick with the four zones, and then that's what I would deliver as part of
that. I guess what I appreciate that. That's helpful. I guess one of the things that's troubling me is that the earlier analysis we had that looked at the potential different zones and what they might be used for also factored in the kinds of boats that were anticipated to be on the water and the fragile state of some of the long-time anchor-out vessels. And so it strikes me that if we said go for a simpler plan, that requires us to ignore data that we've received from an earlier report. And why would we want to do that at this point?
Yeah, so it wouldn't be ignoring the data, but it would be batching it differently. I do have the Merkle study in front of me, so I could pull it up and look at it. But I kind of want to pull it up and look at it and speak more eloquently. But, you know, that one was talking specifically about, you know, where we could put different kinds of moorings. And that's not what this is looking at. This is just saying we're not going to have activity in this area. So maybe that's the way to think about it, is rather than saying where we are going to put, you know, moorings or allow anchoring, instead saying, okay, this is the area where we're not going to be putting anything.
Right, but I don't think you need feedback from us on that particular topic. We don't have to say mooring, no mooring, or different zones for you to come up with an idea of where the eelgrass would thrive and where there should be moorings, right? I sort of feel like there's the cart before the horse problem here on some of this. I'd also like to know what would be accomplished by the additional data that would be helpful to your analysis.
Mm-hmm. So to speak to the first one, ultimately it will be up to the RBRE board to either, you know, approve or not approve this plan. Mm-hmm. And so I want to make sure that I'm putting together something that is to the liking and to the interest of this board. Because if what I'm hearing from all of you tonight says, no, four zones is too complicated, we want to keep it simple, and then I delivered a product that had four zones, then that's actually something that you can improve. On the flip side, if what I hear from you tonight is, you know, let's listen to that stakeholder feedback, let's make it simpler, you know, I want to deliver a product to this board that you will approve and move forward into implementation. So that's why it's not really cart before the horse, because I need to know what the direction from the board is of what you'd like to see out there. To speak to the second piece about the additional data layers, that would give us information, for example, about where herring has historically been spawning. So as we think about eelgrass and the importance of protecting eelgrass, not just for the plant, but for the ecosystem services that it provides, having that additional information of, okay, not just where eelgrass is, but where is it really serving that herring that's relying on it? Where is it serving the birds that are using it? That additional analysis would make sure that the area we identify as protecting eelgrass is that we're protecting the eelgrass that is most important for us.
And does that information already exist? So it would be a matter for you to go out and find existing information on where herring have spawned over a certain period of time, or is there some other way that you would need to develop that information?
We would not need to develop or collect any new data. Those data exist. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife has been tracking that for about the past 15 years.
All right. Thanks.
Claire?
Rebecca, I just have a couple of questions. First, I'd like to thank you. This is the second time I've seen your presentation, and you brought it to us at the Belvedere City Council, and it was very, very appreciative and very, very well received here. So I guess my question follows on what Supervisor Sears' questions were, you know, what do you need from us? If you got a green light from us, is it for everything that's in your report, for all the matters at the end? How are we going to hear back from you? So give me a little bit on the logistics as you see it.
Okay, yeah. So logistically, the first question about the number of zones, nothing that would not require any changes to the existing scope or like the scale of the effort. So that would just be sort of information that I would take along with the stakeholder report and the policy guidance for developing that draft eelgrass protection and management plan. If the direction from the board was that you wanted to do a more quantitative and spatial analysis and you know, bring in that additional spatial approach, that would probably require a contract amendment, an amendment to the scope of what we're trying to do. There's some that we can do in the existing scope because the Marin County has some GIS support, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has been really great in sharing his data with us. So there's a certain amount we can do without having to change any scopes, but, you know, if you wanted something more robust, then we would have to actually go back and see, okay, well, what is the end goal that we, or the end product that we're looking for? And then finally, if the feedback from the board were, yes, we would like to include planning for the mooring program, then that really changes the direction of what we're doing here. And I don't know exactly what the next step would be, but that would pretty substantively change things. And I don't know, Curtis, if you have anything additional you'd like to add on that.
Yeah, thank you. To compliment what Rebecca said, she and I have discussed this previously, and my interest in bringing this forward tonight is as we look forward and we're getting feedback from the community, all the different aspects of the community, we're hearing a desire for this program to incorporate certain features. And what was most interesting to me is the fact that the issue of the mooring field came up and people were really genuinely asking, like, why isn't this part of this? Why aren't we considering that? So I wanted your board to be apprised of that and then start kind of discussing and thinking about if we, as we move forward, making sure that we understand if we want to get the best possible product, the finished product at the end, we need your guidance, and we also need to be aware that that's going to change ultimately the budgeting of all this. I'm also trying to, you know, this is where I'm trying to grow into Beth Pollard's position. I'm trying to look forward and see 5 years down the road when things have progressed, we've moved along. I'd like this report, this eelgrass protection management program, to really be something that is forward-thinking enough so that it supports something down the road. I hope that makes sense. I don't want to get 5 years down the road and say, gee, shucks, we should have done it this way. Ah, we forgot to put this in. You know, at the time we didn't have the budget, so we cut this part out. It's a balancing act because I'm not saying that we should incorporate a mooring plan into the eelgrass protection management program, but if there is data available and it's based on, you know, well, from Fish and Wildlife, multiple years of data, and we've got the eelgrass study from Merkle, it begins to lay the underpinnings of something that we can work with in the future. So I just want to make sure we position ourselves in a way such that we have something that will be useful as we move forward.
Can I follow up on that for a second? I think that was very helpful, Curtis, but I think we want to be very, very clear that what the scope would be as it relates to a mooring program. Rebecca has incredible skills and experience and strengths, but planning for a mooring program, I'm not sure, falls into the category of her experience. So if you were really going to do that in some fulsome way, it wouldn't simply be end up in a report that Rebecca was the author of. But if there is additional data related to eelgrass, more broadly conceived, that would feed into a mooring program analysis by her, you know, and maybe that's collaborative with other people, I think that could be helpful. But I think you want to be very clear on exactly what you're suggesting.
Perhaps it would be more accurate for me to say that I want.
Am I selling you short, Rebecca? I'm sorry.
Well, first of all, no, you're not selling me short. I could certainly put together a team of people who have those skills and project manage that, et cetera, et cetera. But I have never personally designed a mooring program. What I was going to say though is, in terms of, being clear of what we're proposing, I know that for me personally, there's nothing I'm specifically proposing tonight. What I wanted to share was this is what I'm hearing. Is there any particular way that this board would like to change course or do anything different based on that feedback?
No, I understand that, but you're asking for direction from us, and so we need to be very clear with ourselves about what we're talking about. That's all.
Okay. David, do you have any questions?
No, I don't. The questions I've had have already been covered, but thank you, Rebecca, for a great presentation, as always.
Thank you, David.
Okay, so now this is the open public time on this topic of the eelgrass protection and management plan that Rebecca presented. So if you'd like to speak, please raise your hand and the moderator will allow you to come in. You have to state your name and you have 3 minutes.
I want to just break in here real quick. Robbie Collison sent me a text and he wasn't able to raise the hand. So can we start with Robbie, please? Tom, thanks.
Yeah, I'm not seeing him here. Hang on a sec.
Robbie, you might be able to unmute.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Now
there
I'm
you go.
Thank you. Well, but
Robbie, anyway, you got 3 minutes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's all right. So I'm very flattered that I was able to be on so many of those slides regarding the outreach process. Rebecca, I felt when you approached us in the midst of all the duress that's happening in this community, I felt it was tone deaf and so disrespectful. And I know in those messages I let you know my feelings about how the eelgrass plan is being managed is that it's a stakeholder process that's allowing the RVRA to set up the political backdrop to implement the BCDC policies to eliminate people on Anchorage. And so my concern, and that was my concern, I tried to reach out to talk to you about that, but you never did. And so I didn't see a reason to pursue it further in participating. But I think once we get a small craft harbor district, something where actually people out here have some say in the Anchorage's management, I think eelgrass is going to be a really important part where we get people jobs. We could manage, environmental justice is the name of the game. Environmental justice where we have a beautiful environment, because the people who are most invested in a healthy Rainbow Bay are people that live there. Absolutely. So that's why I feel like until people's homes and their residential, their integrity within the community is assured, it didn't feel like something I wanted to participate in. So I appreciate you putting me on your slides, but, there's another side to that as well. I think there needs to be a real new chapter on Rainbow Bay
including renaming Richardson Bay to Rainbow Bay.
Yes.
many different things. And sure. And that's my comments on eelgrass management right now. I know that other people have some comments right now.
Hello.
Thank you, Robbie.
Hi. This is Jeff Jacob, and I see Rivka over there on the right-hand screen. I was told 2 hours before the last listening meeting that she scheduled with the Anchorage, and I am as in touch with what goes on as a lot of people out here. There was no way that there was the outreach. There were not posters. It is not like we don't want to participate. Of course we do, and we are right now. So I'm going to say Happy Hanukkah, Chag Sameach. People might want to look into the history of what the Maccabean Revolt was, that the Judah Maccabee was not able to reach the Greek army, the hoplites, but of course he could reach his fellow Israelites. So what I'm saying to you, Rivka, is we just are transitioning away from emoluments. I don't know if you're familiar with that, using office, a position in office to make money. That as Israelites, we are not supposed to do that. We have people called the Levites and the Kohens specifically to govern and not to do that. So we all are modeled after that, as I'm sure you know. So I'm saying to go from the Audubon Society to a consultancy for RBRA seeming to want to eradicate the oldest culture in Marin is not beautiful for the Goyim to see. It does not seem an Israelite value to put eelgrass above human beings. That specifically on the Passover, we use lamb's blood to end the plague above our doors because the Egyptians worship lambs. So we don't worship each other. We have many problems out here. We take care of it. When you said marine debris, it turns out that Halsey's boat was taken by the Marin sheriffs and the coroners to investigate, that there are still wrecks out there, Curtis, that have not been cleaned up. Okay? So I have a question, too, about that picture that you took from above of the Anchorage with very, very conveniently circled places where the eelgrass is not. If I go on a drone, or, you know, I can't go on a drone, all right, fine, in an airplane, and I take a picture of the bay, it's not going to look like that.
Hey, Jeff, your 3 minutes is up, buddy.
We are trusting in the best part of you to understand that we are not here for money. We will communicate with you in the right way. So shalom, okay. Shalom. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Yeah, we've got a few other hands raised. I believe the first one was Rainbow Bay residents.
Okay.
Oh, it also looked like there was somebody else from Robbie's group.
Yeah, there was one. Kevin.
Yeah,
okay.
Jim?
Sorry about that.
Go ahead.
It was a very interesting report, Rebecca. It's interesting that I haven't seen it. I go through quite a bit of the RBRA's packets and reports, and I haven't seen it, but I have seen some of your previous work. I believe that would be the Aramburu Island area, or the what you're calling the Point development. I believe that's near Strawberry Cape, and I don't know why nobody calls it a cape when it's one of the seven capes of Marin County. Anyway, so I'm curious as to your corporation. When you were developing Aramburu Island, was it a similar process as now? Because it appears to me, that's a potential conflict of interest, for you to be on one end where you are promoting, from the standpoint of being, let's say, a
employee of the Audubon or an employee of your own corporation, and then a member of the public promoting certain things to the RBRA, and then you turn up to be also filing grants, writing the grant offers or the grant proposals. Then you turn up to have your same corporation doing the redevelopment, let's say, of an Arambaroo Island type situation or a potential multi-million dollar eelgrass, experimental eelgrass rehabification, which nobody really understands what that is. So what you have is you have the most healthy eelgrass bed in San Francisco Bay, yeah. And now you're going to F it up. So the boats that you see there are creating a vibrant, healthy structure, the most healthy structure, you said for yourself. 90% of all the herring that spawned in San Francisco Bay spawned there. Why? Because it is the most vibrant, healthy situation for them.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That gentleman's name.
All right. Kevin Kiffer.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Moderator, do we have anyone else?
Yes, we can go to, sorry, they've lowered their hands. I guess Barbara Salzman is next.
Okay. Barbara?
You're muted.
Myself, but am I unmuted now?
Yeah, you were unmuted. Sorry.
Yeah, you muted me. First of all, I'd like to thank Rebecca for getting me into this Zoom meeting because I couldn't do, as I said earlier, I couldn't get in with two computers on either one of your emails. So, well, what a good presentation, Rebecca. I would like to say that I think it is premature for the board to take any action on this. I think that you should have a written report, even if draft, and there should be an opportunity other than this this public hearing for the public to comment. I mean, one of my questions is there what you should be able to have the benefit of written comments that might come in from the public, from people who can't come to this meeting. So I would urge you not to do anything definitive tonight, but I also wanted to make two other points, and I have mixed feelings about doing this. I don't remember if we'd come, because I participated in one of the listening sessions, and I was very impressed. I was in a session with some scientists, and I this did not come out in Rebecca's presentation, but one of them, and of course I agree with this, suggested or recommended that, or said that she did not think that there should be any mooring in any areas of eelgrass, even if it was degraded eelgrass. And of course we strongly agree with that. If you really want to restore eelgrass, you don't put moorings in it. And in the discussions, I think it would be really useful to differentiate between moorings that you can't legally keep out, at least after before 72 hours. That is a mooring that from people who are traveling, who come in temporarily. I think they should be in a certain area, but, you can't legally keep them out. And, secondly, I mean, to simplify it, I think one of the other suggestions that came out of my group was to put all the zones together and consider them as one zone. And I think that was certainly worth looking at. And so that's my recommendations just from this report. And I think it was a good report from Rebecca. I hope you get more information.
Thank you, Barbara. All right. Anyone else?
Yes, next we have Kelly Darling.
Hello. I got it.
Hello, Kelly.
Okay, hi. One thing that I'm concerned with Rebecca's report is that it does not seem to clearly define the level of the threats to the bay or the eelgrass, meaning, you know, is it the marinas that are having illegal sewage dumped? Is it the sewage runoff from the streets? What percentage of damage is being done by what entity? And I don't see that discussed really anywhere in any of these reports. It's only focusing on the anchor outs or the anchorage and the boats when there's many more threats that are at a higher severity of a threat to the eelgrass, supported by reports by NOAA and some other government agencies that do water quality testing and come out and do eelgrass testing and things like that. And I'm not seeing any of that being clearly defined in her report as far as who's doing what damage at what percent. And I would really like to see that be brought up to the forefront a little higher so that we can see clearly, you know, is it the runoff from sewage or the streets? Is it the marinas? Is it the, you know, who's doing how much percentage of damage to the eelgrass and then address those problems in that order? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thanks,
okay.
Kelly.
Okay, now put them up one more.
All right.
Hey,
next,
one more.
Please. Okay.
Hey, is Lewis Chenwick, we'll have him talk.
Hey, Lewis. We just lost you.
How about now?
Okay, let's get back.
Okay, I'm back. Oh, I know you're going to like this. Anyway, I've been able to get on these Zoom chats over the past 3 months, and it's really been hard. Haven't been able to communicate with you guys since this COVID thing has been blaring away. Anyway, so let's go to Strawberry Point, Strawberry Spit, that was developed by Eichler, and it was still put in there. BCDC was just starting becoming an entity, and they had it, the planning department had it set for two family ranch homes to be on the complete spit. Okay, that was in 1970. And then all of a sudden, in the 80s, when Rambrew took office and stuff, I think he was just put in there to fill the spit. And he disregarded all fill responsibilities and everything and filled the spit, you know, raised grade 4 feet without BCDC's permission and pushed the thing through to he was trying to get 190 units out there, houses out there, and they settled for 86, I believe. You don't know anything about it? No? Yeah. Anyway, so that was with what was Kevin Kiefer was saying, and then they split the island right there and gave Rambrew Island to Rambrew, who had something going with the Audubon lady there. The Audubon parcels itself, I've never seen so many parcels split into so many little tiny parcels of that whole – The whole hill there, it used to be called the Goat Ladies place, and that's where the Lyford House is. And, you know, she has that split into so many lots. Like, you know, I don't know if you guys are aware of that or not. Kate Sears was aware of it, and I brought it to her attention that, you know, a lot of the bay is private property. And we showed her maps, and, you know, she looked at them and stuff. I'm surprised Merkel didn't know that the bay was a lot private property. So anyway, so those few things to think about, you know, two family ranch homes and that turns into 86 million dollar or $2 million piece houses, you know, it's
water runoff,
lot of everything, you know,
a lot of effect on the bay.
Anyway, thank you.
Okay, looks like last hand that we have is from Casey Arms.
Okay, Casey.
Hi, everyone. So Casey Arms, I'm the center director for the Richardson Bay Audubon Center and Sanctuary, which is a field office of Audubon, California. I was able to participate in one of the listening sessions for the eelgrass protection and management plan earlier this fall, and I would like to thank Rebecca of Coastal Policy Solutions and Curtis for hosting a very honest and informative and really a necessary discussion on eelgrass conservation and protection in Richardson Bay. As a conservation professional myself that works in Marin County, I very much appreciated the opportunity to weigh in on the development of this plan. Audubon, California continues to look forward to participating in the development of this plan, and we're excited to see it move into a draft and a formal document. We also appreciate Coastal Policy Solutions' partnership with the RBRA And attempting to facilitate workshops for the managers and other stakeholders. And I do hope that everyone's able to come to the table together. And I want to offer that Audubon California's engagement staff, as well as our science and GIS crew, are available whenever needed to help advance this important protection plan. And I know how complex and really how complicated it is to balance an avian habitat, the stewardship needs, and the community. It's part of what I do every day for Audubon. However, when it comes to eelgrass, to me, it's really quite simple. It has to be protected, and we can't diminish how important it is to Richardson Bay and the entire region. That being said, Audubon will continue to advocate for total compassion for those that are living on the water, and that all processes facilitated in this engagement include social service aspects, excuse me. And as always, I appreciate the opportunity to share and comment in this forum. Thank you.
All right, we've got a hand raised from Rainbow Bay residents.
Hi, I'm a Rainbow Bay resident, and I have a message for the RBRA. Let's stand up for this idea, this act to improve the lot of all. Strike out against injustice, send forth a tiny ripple of hope, crossing against each other with a million different centers of them. We stop home destruction on Rainbow Bay. It's the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. Against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. No warrant shall issue upon pub cause by oath and amendment 4. Stop home destruction on Rainbow Bay. Stop home destruction on Rainbow Bay. Crossing each other from a million different centers of energy. Daring those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance. Let's stop home destruction on Rainbow Bay. It's the right of the people to secure their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. No warrant shall issue prompt cause by oath amendment 4. Stop home destruction on Rainbow Bay. RBRA, stop home destruction on Rainbow Bay.
Okay, thank you very much. Right, is that it? We'll bring it back to the board right now. So, Becca is asking for some direction here. Kate, do you have any kind of motion or any recommendations?
Well, I think if there is some additional information that's available, like Rebecca was suggesting,
mm-hmm.
it could be helpful if it's feasible to integrate that additional information into the existing contract that we have. I'm not sure that I have I'm a short timer, have an appetite for expanding the scope of this contract. I'm going to leave that up to the rest of you, but yeah.
Claire? You're muted.
Yeah, I would agree about not expanding the scope. I think that sort of the point I made earlier about clarity. What is the clarity of the next step here with this work? And then what steps are taken and who takes them?
Okay.
Really? I mean, who else needs to hear? She's been making these presentations to various, other city councils. So, I think, there's, availability of, input from other cities and Sausalito, we haven't heard from them on their opinion and so forth. So I would not expand the scope of it. I'd just like to see a little bit more clarity on what is next and what specifically is needed.
Okay. David, are you there with us?
I am, and I think I can just echo what Kate and Claire just said. I again also wouldn't really be in favor of expanding the scope at this point. Clarity is always great, and to the point of simplicity, I think that would also be very helpful. So I'll leave my comments at that.
Okay, and I have to agree with my fellow board members. I think simplicity is really important here, but clarity and just don't expand the scope right now. But Rebecca, you did an excellent job, like usual, on this whole presentation, and looking forward to work with you in 2021.
Absolutely. I can speak a bit to what the next step is. Is I'll be delivering a yield grass protection and management plan. Probably not in time for the January board meeting, but ideally in time for the February board meeting. And that will be, and one of the comments to Barbara's comment, and I can respond, I have a couple notes in response to comments if you'd like. But there was one of the comments was about, wanting to have a written document for which, comments can be made. And that's the next step is that draft plan. And that will be presented as a written document, but then we'll have a comment period. So that's what's coming next.
Okay, great.
A couple other notes. I appreciated the note that there wasn't quite enough notice. So I think for those Mariner listening sessions, so I think what we'll try and do is schedule one or two more, and hopefully have, a bit more notice for those and hopefully get some more attendance. To Kevin's comment, I've only been in the Bay Area for 3 years, so I was not actually involved in the development of Aramburu. So I think that you have me confused with somebody. Barbara, I spoke to you already. Kelly, darling, I appreciate those comments about water quality. As you'll notice in the presentation, I actually didn't speak at all about water quality impacts from boats on Richardson's Bay. The main feedback we got during those stakeholder sessions was water quality from stormwater runoff and other shoreside inputs. So that's really where more of the concern is. I don't have that percentage breakdown. I'm not sure that those data exist, but I can tell you that the focus of the water quality conversation is from stormwater runoff. Casey, I appreciate the offer of science and GIS support. I will be tapping you for that next week. And I appreciate learning that the historical name for Richardson's Bay was Rainbow Bay. I only recently learned that. And I believe that's the extent of it.
Great. Thank you, Rebecca.
May I jump in with a clarification, too?
Sure.
Part of the reason why we even launched into this effort of the eelgrass protection management program was when you look at a nautical chart, the chart identifies Richardson's Bay as a special anchorage. So that means that it's open. You can anchor anywhere in the bay, except for the Richardson's Bay sanctuary during this time of year. So that being said, there needed to be some clarity and some refinement about if we're talking about preserving the ecological systems in Richardson's Bay, we need to go a little bit further, and that's what this effort is about. So it's not about trying to place blame on people. It's not about trying to eradicate anybody. It's really about taking what's currently identified as an anchorage, as it has been historically, and refining it so that we're all coexisting and that we're doing our part to make sure that all those reasons that make Richardson's Bay so special, that's preserved. So that's what this is about, just to clarify. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So, Rebecca, you have your marching orders. And, Curtis, thank you very much. We'll move down to open time for public expression. So members of the public are welcome to address the board for up to a period of time, maximum of 3 minutes per speaker on matters not on the agenda. Under the State Brown Act, board members may not deliberate or take action on items not on the agenda and generally only may listen. So is there anyone from the audience that would like to speak raise your hand, and you have 3 minutes.
Hey, yeah, it looks like maybe there's some difference in our, how our Zoom set up, but I guess I'm using what I do. But anyway, I just wanted to, I think today was an excellent day. This was a, we did our first Cross Bay Coalition with United Front Against Displacement. We got about 30 people demonstrating outside of Larry Goldsband's home, alerting people about what the Bay Conservation Development Commission is doing. And so now, because they're doing an eviction, a cease and desist order, much like they're pushing on the RVRA right now in Oakland for encampment in Union Point. So we're collaborating with Union Point right now to just shed light on the BCDC. And I think we have a great team. And I think there's a, you know, there's a room opportunity for the RVRA where right now, you know, if the threat of litigation is the big motivating factor for, you know, going out for people's homes, well, we're working on that right now. We're working on BCDC right now. So, you know, that's where, again, it doesn't have to be as contentious as if, you know, we're going after the BCDC. And we have a Cross Bay Coalition for that. And, we want to have environmental justice. We want to help the environment. But we also want a place where people can live, where people can go to shore. They're not afraid that their boat, which is always under some 72-hour fear, where you know, oh, their boat could take seizures, right? Because right now that ordinance, which I don't think passes constitutional muster since the Martin versus Boise decision, that you could tell people you can't live on the bay if there's not adequate shelters. Like that's not – right now we're filing claims in Petaluma because of camping tickets. It's the same deal in a different situation, plus the federal maritime considerations for law. I think the legality is something – I mean, you guys are working in federal court right now with Berkshire, so I don't need to explain it to you. But right now it's like – let's work on the BCDC. Let's build up, you know, small craft harbor district. So, you know, where the community actually has a say, and it's not just like a bunch of homeowners. You know, you guys got to look at the optics from the outside. It's a bunch of affluent homeowners like yourselves making decisions that impact a community of people that are making it by on the bay. And, you know, there's no reason. It's very reasonable to have a small-time harbor craft district and have, you know, considerations just like any other community service district, you know, in the county. You know, many of which have comparable size. I mean, it's not a radical proposal. So that's all. I want to update you about that exciting development relating to the BCDC. All right.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. Anyone else?
Yeah. Hello, Jim.
Okay.
Kevin Kiefer, I'm an anchor out. I've been an anchor out for 12 years in Richardson Bay. Finally, my voter registration is starting to catch up to my constructive presence on the bay. Now I'm registered a zero Fed Anchor Rich Bay, Sausalito 94965. So it's getting closer. I'll get that zero adjusted. And then we'll get the Sausalito part off of there, and we'll add to the registration the Wassatorba territory, which is the waters and shores and tidelands of Richardson Bay Anchorage. So Curtis mentioned, but I don't believe it was on the agenda. Curtis mentioned mapping, navigational mapping. So when the RBRA received its feasibility for joint jurisdictional exercise of federal authority over Richardson Bay, that included a specific directive that the RBRA or the County of Marin, because they both received feasibility for joint jurisdiction, that they were not to alter the dimensions of the anchorage. So I think you better have your legal advisors look at that, have Jenna take a look at that, and see if what you are doing is potentially altering the dimensions of Richardson Bay Anchorage. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin, anyone else?
Yes. Thank you. for the opportunity to speak with all of you. And it seems that you were happy at the beginning of this meeting, and I want you to be equally happy at the end, that we have been given an opportunity here because of what has happened to coalesce as a community, to come together in ways that we could not have otherwise. And so for that, a lot of the thanks go to you folks for helping that happen. And we want you to join us. There is no way a small craft harbor district can ever get off the ground unless the elected officials in Marin go along. We have some new elected officials now, and we're going to do our best to work with the people that are out there. We love this place, and that's why we feel a need to defend it as best we can. And we do make mistakes like everybody else, and we want to own up to them when we do. So I really, from my heart, I say, even to Curtis, and maybe especially to Curtis, that we understand the dilemmas of being in the position that you're in, even though we're not. I hope that you understand what we have to deal with out here, and that we can take care of the problems as best we can, and we do accept outside help, but outside force, that's a little different thing. So, shalom.
Anyone else?
Hi, this is Barbara again.
Okay, Barbara.
Okay, thanks a million. I just want to let you know I forgot to address to Mr. Havel.
All right.
I have all the paperwork. I'll be dropping it off at his office at the courthouse tomorrow regarding my, as a disabled senior, I have a double fractured skull, and then having my boat destroyed. It's a minimum of 5 years in prison and up to $20,000 that will have to be compensated. Or they will go to prison. He will go to prison for crushing the boat. So I just want to let you know, there's no threats here or any of that. I'm thankful that we're going forward. I mean, we're talking civilly to each other. We're going forward instead of just crushing boats out there. So that paper will be dropped off at the courthouse. Once again, I thank you very much.
All right. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to close. No hands raised. Thank you. Open time for public expression. Okay, item number 7, reports, comments, staff updates, board member matters. Well, before we go even further here, maybe there are some smiles on our board, but as some of you may know, I came on this board 6 years ago when I got elected to Mill Valley, 5 years ago. And when I first started here, I met a lot of our Mariners and stuff, but I had someone who I was looking forward to work with, and that was a young lady named Kate Sears, who had been on the board a few years longer than I have. And it was a very interesting time back in those days, meeting down in Sausalito, meeting with everyone and trying to get the RBRA into a position where we are today. But unfortunately, things do come to an end, and I guess I'm kind of saddened to say that, you know, Kate has chose to retire from the Board of Supervisors, and this will be her last meeting on the RBRA. We've done the coffees together. We've, took some extra times to meet with all the involved parties, to the board as a whole, but Kate, you and I and your staff, I've actually enjoyed the 101 coffee discussions we've had down in Sausalito with the Mariners, because, you know, we all do recognize that we're dealing with lives and environmental issues and a variety of things, but Kate, you kind of kept the balance here for Southern Marin. You've done such an excellent job, and I just want to say, as the chair of the board, and by the way, you wrapped me into this chair position before I even knew it. I think I was told that day, oh, by the way, Jim, you're the chair. It's for 2 years, so I have until April. So watch out who's left here on the board. But at this point, you know, I know next week's your last board meeting, then you have a few weeks before you go to Hawaii or your vacation, but personally, I just want to say, Kate, that I really enjoyed working with you. I hopefully you'll stay involved. I know Beth Pollard's on here, and hopefully they might want to speak up at one point. But this year, I thought we did a lot for the RBRA and the transition plan, the outreach, the you know, hiring Beth, Curtis, you're doing a good job. It's tough, but thank you very much for what you've done. And on top of that, before I finish speaking here, is we have one other person, Claire. I know Claire, you're leaving too, and so we're gonna have a whole new crew. It'd be just Dave and I and two new members. But I do have one little connection with Stephanie Moulton Peters, so with her being on the Novi City Council in the past. So that's my announcement. I'll miss you, Kate and Claire, both of you, and hopefully we can get together sometime outside of COVID and have some coffee and have a good discussion about things. And I don't know if Dave or Claire or anyone else in the I hate to even mention the raising their hands, but any board members have anything to say?
Yeah, I don't know if Claire dropped off, but I'll just say, since I joined the town council in Tiburon, I've worked with Kate in a couple of different situations, and always I'm floored, impressed, and awestruck by her encyclopedic knowledge of all the issues, every facet of every issue, which is even more impressive. She clearly is a very compassionate elected official, and that comes through in public and private conversations that I've had with her. And I think the hallmark is her pragmatism in searching for solutions, regardless of what the issue is, in a compassionate way. And I've certainly learned from that, and I'll take it forward in my public service, and Godspeed and best wishes for what your future holds. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, we were one-on-one there. I would have some flowers to give you right now, or something to, even though.
Yeah, where's the hug?
The hug, the RBRA is one of many committees we work on, being on our elected positions. This is about as intense as our elected positions, but.
Yeah. Well, thank you both for those kind words. And honestly, having been on the RBRA for a number of years now, I really do feel like the recent years have been very different. And I think you both get, both you, David, and you, Jim, get credit for that. I think in particular, the time that we've spent working with members of the Mariner community, that's really gotten that input has been embedded in the policy guidance for RBRA now going forward, and I think that's just tremendously important. And I hope that that continues going forward. I'm sure it will, because you both have a focus on that, particularly you, Jim, and a nice way of dealing with folks. And I think, it's going to be good. We've got
keep watching.
It's going to be good. No, as a Sausalito resident, I have to just not think about it. But how could I not, right? As a longtime Sausalito resident, this is my front yard. So how could I not pay attention to what's happening out on the water? And I really do appreciate everybody's best efforts. I appreciate your keeping a compassionate look and understanding of the complexity of this situation. I know you will. And Curtis, you too, you're in a challenging position. But you're doing a good job, and I just want to encourage everybody, and I really do mean everybody, to work together. And Rebecca, I actually really want to note you too, because I think you've been a really helpful presence in working together with a variety of stakeholders and being very open and collaborative, and that's tremendously important, and we all need to carry forward with those qualities. So thank you all. And it's a pity that COVID has slowed us down on a lot of these in-person interactions, but there will be better days ahead in a while.
I hope so.
In a while. Just keep being patient and safe. No, thank you very much.
Curtis, I don't know, is Beth still online here? Being our prior, so Beth, you there?
Yes, I am here. Yes.
Great to hear your voice. Oh, Beth.
Thank you. I just had to add my accolades to Kate. I think what's been phenomenal about you is that with all you have on your plate, Richardson Bay, whenever anything came up and I needed your help in Richardson Bay, you were always there. And secondly, your focus on the people and the both people and environment were important and really grounding the agency in compassion and in inclusion as you worked through some really tough decision-making. So I wish you all just a great retirement, and I'm sure it's not your last act. I hope to see you again involved in public service. So thank you for all your help for me. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Beth. And, you know, you were just a key player, I think, in moving us forward in a really positive direction. And I did tell you that you couldn't really leave until I left. And so I'm glad you've hung in here with me.
So you better stick around for a while. Okay, Curtis.
I've had the great pleasure of working with Kate for years before this, and I've always admired your direct, compassionate, thoughtful approach. And in the sense that that compassion is backed by a strong will, and I appreciate that, and a clear mind. So I've always appreciated your guidance. I look up to you, and it's always been just such a pleasure. I've tried to learn as much as possible in all the years working with you and try to apply that in my day-to-day operations. So thank you for everything. And
thank you for those nice words, Curtis. I'm just so glad you came back from cruising at exactly the right time.
And also to Claire, I wanted to thank Claire as well. It's while our interaction has been brief, I would dare call it spectacular. It's been wonderful working with Claire. So thank you for your service.
I'd like to add thanks to Claire, to Claire and Kate, if I could. Claire, I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to work more together, but I appreciate your efforts. And Kate, thank you so much. You know, when I remember sitting down with you and Leslie very early on when I started with Audubon, and I was just, you know, learning the ropes of this whole situation, and the inclusion that I felt with you, and that there was never any like, well, you know, you're a newcomer. What do you know about the situation? Instead, it was, more hands to help. And I really appreciated that perspective, and just made me feel very welcome in this space and in this community. So thank you so much for that. I'm glad that I got a chance to work with you.
Thank you, Rebecca. And I'm glad you're still with RBRA. It's very good. Yeah.
Hey, Kate, sorry. You might not recognize me without
Tom.
My hat.
We have matching hats. No,
yeah, yeah. I'm going to miss you making your laps in the hallway at the Civic Center.
Nice.
So best wishes.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Okay, so that should be the conclusion for the last meeting for 2020. We have a lot of work ahead of us. We're still discussing whether we'll have a meeting in January. Might be not until February. It will be our first meeting for 2021, but we'll keep people posted. So please be safe this year. Wear your masks. Follow social distancing. Let's get out of this pandemic and let's move forward next year. Make it a good year for all of all parties. It's not going to be a win-win for everyone, but hopefully it'll be a good compromise where everyone feels like they had a say in it and we work together and the solution will be long-term for all of us. So looking forward to 2021. Kate, thanks again. Once again, Claire and Dave, I'll see you next year. And Curtis will be talking. And Rebecca, keep smiling. Thank you. And a meeting adjourned.
Good night, everybody. Happy night.